August 4th, 1992, Houston, Texas. While working her shift as a waitress at a strip club, 23-year-old Tara Breckenridge volunteers to go home early, shortly after midnight. When she fails to return to her apartment by morning, Tara's boyfriend, Wayne Hecker, goes searching for her. Wayne soon discovers Tara's abandoned car next to a freeway, and the vehicle's alternator belt is missing. Since their relationship was troubled, and he has a shaky alibi during the time period Tara disappeared, Wayne becomes a potential suspect. However, there is no evidence to implicate anyone, and Tara remains a missing person. After that, the trail went cold.
How do you respond to the charge that Wayne Hecker had something to do with Tara's disappearance?
To tell you the truth, I don't know an explanation to anybody but the Lord, and the Lord has given me, I'm waiting to hear something, and it's from Him. I can't answer to anybody because there's not an answer that I have. Only He has it, and until there is an answer, I don't think anybody will be satisfied. And I might be pinpointed for the rest of my life. And I mean, there's nothing I can do about that. There's a lot of people that have said things, made a lot of derogatory statements, and I can't help them.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and that voice you just heard narrating our intro belongs to Cheryl Weldon, the latest winner of our Trail Went Cold listener voiceover contest. So thank you very much, Cheryl. As you probably know, we hold a monthly contest in which I randomly draw a lucky winner to narrate the opening of one of our episodes, so if you would like to enter the contest, I will be providing instructions about how to do so at the end of this episode. But now let's talk about the voice you heard after our intro. That sound clip was from an interview on Unsolved Mysteries with a man named Wayne Hecker, who was considered a potential suspect in the 1992 disappearance of Tara Breckenridge, who is the subject of today's episode. Wayne was Tara's boyfriend at the time she went missing, and as you can imagine, that response he gave to allegations that he might have been responsible for her disappearance is considered to be one of the oddest things ever said by an interviewee on Unsolved Mysteries. Tara worked as a waitress at a strip club and vanished without a trace after leaving early on one of her shifts, before her abandoned car would be discovered by Wayne himself later that morning. Given that their relationship was troubled at the time, Wayne seemed to be a promising suspect, but this is not one of those cases where it's completely obvious that the spouse did it. While Wayne had a shaky alibi that night, it still seems like he would have had a narrow window of time in order to kill Tara and get rid of her body. And given the fact that Tara worked in a strip club, and there was at least one regular patron there who seemed pretty obsessed with her, it's not implausible that one of them could have been responsible for her disappearance. All we know is that Tara is still a missing person nearly 27 years later, so we're going to explore all the different possible scenarios of what could have happened to her on today's episode. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the disappearance of Tara Breckenridge.
Thank you.
Our story begins in Houston, Texas in 1992. Our central figure is 23-year-old Tara Breckenridge, who originally hails from the town of Del Rio and is the third of five siblings. After graduating high school in 1987, Tara decided to move to Houston to attend photography school, but since she needed a job to financially support herself, she eventually got hired as a waitress at the Men's Club, an upscale strip club located on Sage Road in the southwest section of the city. Since the job paid relatively well, Tara was content to work there for the next 3 years while she went to school and continued to pursue her photography career. In 1989, Tara became involved in a relationship with her boyfriend, Wayne Hecker, and the couple would move into an apartment together. While Wayne was not overly thrilled about the idea of Tara working in a strip club, he was willing to tolerate it, since he was often unemployed, so Tara's job financially supported both of them. On the evening of August 3rd, Tara showed up to work her shift at the Men's Club, which would have ordinarily ended at 2 a.m., but business turned out to be rather slow. So shortly after midnight on August the 4th, Tara's manager informed the waitresses that he was planning to send two of them home early and asked if anyone would volunteer. Surprisingly, Tara said she would be willing to leave early, which seemed uncharacteristic of her, since she was always keen to work her full shifts to make as much money as she could. Nevertheless, Tara changed out of her uniform and officially clocked out at 12:29 a.m. As she exited the club, Tara did not acknowledge the doorman when he said hi to her, which also seemed unusual. The club's security guard then escorted Tara to her 1986 Pontiac Fiero in the parking lot and watched her drive away, but this would turn out to be the last time she was ever seen alive. On this particular evening, Wayne Hecker was at a local pool hall located 15 minutes north of the Men's Club. He made one attempt to call Tara at the club during her shift, but was told she was busy working the floor. Wayne left the pool hall and went home during the early morning hours, but claimed that when he arrived at their apartment at around 5 a.m., he was surprised to discover that Tara was not there. When she failed to surface, Wayne became concerned and went out looking for her. At approximately 7 a.m., Wayne was surprised to come across Tara's Pontiac Fiero on the shoulder of the West Loop North Freeway. It was parked in the 1200 block near 12th Street, which would have been Tara's normal route home from work, but the car was abandoned and Tara was nowhere in sight. When Wayne pulled over to check out the vehicle, he discovered it was locked and that the car alarm and flashers were off. While there was no sign of any struggle, Wayne noticed that Tara's mace was still inside the car, even though she always carried it around for protection. The police were soon notified and summoned to the scene, and they would soon discover that the vehicle's alternator belt was inexplicably missing from the engine. Anyway, police were unable to turn up any trace of Tara and launched a missing persons investigation, but it wasn't long before they started putting their focus on Wayne. According to Tara's family and friends, her relationship with Wayne was very troubled and contentious, and she was thinking of possibly leaving him. Tara's mother claimed that Tara had spoken with her multiple times about moving out, but would always say she wanted to talk things out with Wayne before she made that decision. Only 2 weeks before she went missing, Tara visited her family in Del Rio, and they believed something was not quite right with her, though she wouldn't talk about what was wrong. However, the biggest red flag with Wayne was that he did not seem to have an alibi for the approximate time period Tara was believed to have gone missing. Wayne had spent the evening at a pool hall, but according to witnesses who were there, he left the establishment shortly after midnight and did not return for an hour and 45 minutes. As you'll recall, Tara was last seen leaving the Men's Club at 12:30 a.m., and the location her abandoned car was found was only 3 miles from the pool hall, the approximate halfway point of the 15-minute drive between the two locations. It's not entirely clear what type of alibi Wayne provided to the police to account for his whereabouts during the window of time he was absent from the pool hall, but it seems they were not satisfied by what he told them. While there was no direct evidence to implicate Wayne in Tara's disappearance, and he denied any involvement, investigators cannot eliminate him as a suspect. But there would also turn out to be another intriguing potential suspect. During her time working at the Men's Club, Tara caught the eye of a man who was a regular patron there. He seemed to develop an obsession with Tara and would often leave her $100 tips. Investigators would uncover a number of love notes this man had written for Tara, one of which read, quote, "Please don't be scared. Do what your heart tells you. I'm very excited that you'll marry me," end quote. This man apparently knew that Tara was having issues in her relationship with Wayne, and seemed to be hoping they'd break up so he could get together with her. However, Tara rejected his advances, though he responded with another note which read, quote, "The more you hold out, the longer you jeopardize what I feel with you," end quote. But in spite of his obsession with Tara, there was nothing angry or threatening written in any of his notes. After interviewing this man, investigators came to the conclusion that he probably wasn't involved in Tara's disappearance. Another bizarre development took place in 1993 when a man named Robert Beatty phoned Tara's parents, claiming to be a police officer investigating her disappearance. He told them that he was on the verge of solving the case and was about to make an arrest. Beatty also made contact with the Houston Police Department, a private investigation firm hired by the Breckinridge family, and some of Tara's acquaintances. In fact, he even went so far as to tell the police and the local media that he was organizing a search effort for Tara in an area north of Houston, but he did not actually show up at the time he specified. Beatty was soon arrested for impersonating a police officer, and believe it or not, it turned out he was only 18 years old. He actually had a prior history of impersonating police and involving himself in missing persons investigations, and handcuffs, detective magazines, and a BB gun would be found in his apartment. Beatty would tell police that he believed a cab driver, or a quote-unquote detective wannabe, was responsible for Tara's disappearance. As far as I can tell, investigators never found any evidence that Beatty was personally involved, as it seems like he was nothing more than a quote-unquote detective wannabe himself. The case would be featured on an episode of Unsolved Mysteries in March of 1995, but it failed to generate any substantial new leads, and the investigation hit a standstill. Sadly, Tara's parents have both since passed away, and Wayne Hecker himself would succumb to cancer in October of 2015. No evidence was ever found to conclusively link Wayne or anyone else to Tara's disappearance, so unfortunately, she continues to remain a missing person. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. Anyway, if you were to ask an Unsolved Mysteries fan to put together a list of some of the oddest moments which took place during interviews on the show, Wayne Hecker's quote, "I don't know an explanation to anybody but the Lord," would definitely rank right up there near the top. I mean, there's nothing really wrong with that quote on its own, but Wayne says this in response to allegations that he was responsible for his girlfriend's disappearance, and instead of flat out saying he didn't do it, he just gives this very roundabout answer. What's interesting is that before Wayne says this, Unsolved Mysteries actually leaves in the audio of the interviewer asking him the question from off camera, and I honestly can't think of any other time in the history of the show when they did that. But in this particular case, I guess they had to do it in order to provide some context to Wayne's answer. All that being said, I do think that Wayne's odd behavior during his interview does cloud people's judgment about him a little bit. There are a number of people who believe Wayne was behind Tara's disappearance, and I'm not going to conclusively say he wasn't, but I'm also not going to call someone guilty based solely on how they came across in a TV interview. I can certainly see why Wayne would be looked at as a potential suspect. His relationship with Tara seemed to be in a rocky place, and if she was planning to break up with him, that gives him a motive, and this very well could have been a crime of passion. It does not exactly sound like Wayne was the ideal boyfriend, since he did not have a job, and it seemed he liked to rely on Tara's income from the men's club to support both of them. The biggest red flag against Wayne is his shaky alibi during the time period when Tara went missing, and the fact that he has a window of 1 hour and 45 minutes which have never been satisfactorily accounted for. But as troubling as that may seem, 1 hour and 45 minutes is not a lot of time for him to leave the pool hall, find Tara, murder her, abandon her car, dispose of Tara's body so thoroughly that there's been no trace of her in over 25 years, and then return to the pool hall again. As far as actual hard evidence that Wayne committed this crime, there's really nothing there, though that doesn't necessarily mean he's innocent. Now, before I start analyzing the case, I have to say that I can't think of too many other stories from Unsolved Mysteries in which I've come across more online comments from people who claim to have personally known the people involved. There's a massive thread about this case on the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum, which I'm always referencing. It dates all the way back to 2005 and contains a ton of different posts from various people who claim to have known Tara and Wayne. There are also a lot of comments like that on Tara's profile page at the official Unsolved Mysteries website, and it's clear that some of them were written by the same people who posted on the message board. A lot of those commenters say some pretty damning things about Wayne, though there are a few posters who have defended him. Later on, I will discuss some of the information they shared, though I will add my usual disclaimer to take all of it with a huge grain of salt, since I cannot vouch for its truthfulness. But first, let's talk about the facts we do know. It really depresses me that in quite a few of the cold cases I've covered, it turns out the victim hailed from a family that had to suffer a number of horrible tragedies. I previously mentioned that Tara's parents have both passed away in recent years, but sadly, Tara is not the only child they lost. In 1986, Tara's older sister was killed in a plane crash at the age of 22. If that wasn't enough, one of Tara's brothers died in 2008 at the age of 43, and I read that it was because he drowned in a lake while attending a party for his parents' 50th wedding anniversary. That is just way too much tragedy for one family to endure, especially since there was no resolution for what happened to Tara. Incidentally, if you do a search on newspapers.com, you can find Tara's name listed in a number of photo credits from articles published in her hometown newspaper, the Del Rio News Herald. Being a photographer was Tara's dream, and what compelled her to move to Houston. She ultimately had to get the job as a waitress at the men's club in order to pay the bills, though I get the impression that it was a pretty decent place to work, which is why Tara was content to remain there for 3 years. But unfortunately, even though this was a fairly upscale strip club, these places can still draw some fairly shady clientele, which is why I cannot discount the possibility that Tara encountered someone at her workplace who was responsible for her disappearance. So we know that because business was slow on Tara's final shift, her manager decided to send two waitresses home early, and Tara volunteered, which surprised everyone, since it was very out of character for her to be willing to lose out on money by not working her full shift. And there's also the odd detail that Tara did not even bother to say hi to the doorman as she was leaving the club, almost as if she was anxious to get out of there as quickly as possible. I don't know if there's any significance to any of this, but you can't overlook the fact that Tara just happened to go missing on the one night she decided to leave early. It's also worth noting that Tara was escorted to her car by security, and as far as I can tell, it doesn't sound like the staff noticed anyone following Tara when she left, so I have my doubts that she was anxious to leave because a patron in the club was making her uncomfortable. So could there be another reason why Tara volunteered to leave early? Well, if you believe that Wayne was responsible for her disappearance, one theory I've read online, which I find really compelling, is that Tara was finally planning to leave him that night, so she wanted to use this opportunity to return to their apartment earlier than usual in order to pack up her things and move out before Wayne got home. I know that Tara had contemplated ending the relationship multiple times, and when she visited her family in Del Rio 2 weeks before she went missing, they felt like something seemed really off about her, so maybe the relationship had finally reached the point of no return. As for Wayne, we know he was at a pool hall that night and was seen leaving around midnight, only a half hour before Tara's shift ended, so perhaps he returned to his apartment. I could see a scenario where Tara immediately drives home from the club to the apartment, but does not expect Wayne to be there. She finally tells him that they're breaking up, which causes things to escalate into violence, and Wayne ends up killing Tara. But of course, the big problem with this theory is that Wayne was seen returning to the pool hall at around 1:45 a.m., so it doesn't sound like he would have had much time to dispose of Tara's body and abandon her car on the shoulder of the West Loop North Freeway. Unfortunately, there's some key details here which have never been released publicly. It's been firmly established that the pool hall was 15 minutes north from the men's club, and the spot where Tara's car was found was located near the halfway point of that route, about 3 miles south of the pool hall. but what we don't know is the exact location of Tara and Wayne's apartment, and how much time it would have taken Wayne to travel there during the 1 hour and 45 minute window when his whereabouts are unaccounted for. In fact, if Wayne killed Tara, he technically only would have had 1 hour and 15 minutes to do so, because even though he left the pool hall at midnight, Tara did not actually leave the men's club until 12:30. And that's one of my biggest issues I have with the idea of Wayne being responsible. Tara's shift normally ended at 2 a.m., so Wayne couldn't have known she was going to volunteer to leave an hour and a half early, especially since she ordinarily never did that. And this was way back in 1992, when cell phones were a lot more uncommon, and I see no indication that either Wayne or Tara owned one at the time. Wayne claimed that he attempted to phone Tara at the club that night, but never spoke to her, because he was told she was busy on the floor. And I don't think that Tara attempted to phone Wayne at the pool hall, but even if she did, she wouldn't have been able to speak to Wayne and tell him about her shift ending early, since he was already gone by midnight. Theoretically, Wayne could have traveled from the pool hall to the men's club, and waited outside to follow Tara when she left at 12:30, but this doesn't make a lot of sense, since Tara's shift should have ended at 2 o'clock, and Wayne would have had no reason to believe she was leaving an hour and a half early. If Wayne returned to the apartment and killed Tara after she arrived home, I suppose he could have left her body there and returned to the pool hall at 1:45 in order to establish an alibi for himself. He then subsequently disposed of Tara's body and abandoned her vehicle at a later time. Wayne's exact whereabouts for the rest of the night are not entirely clear. He claims he returned to their apartment at 5 a.m., but the exact time he left the pool hall has never been mentioned, so I'm not sure if he was there the entire time. We know he discovered Tara's vehicle by the side of the freeway at 7 a.m. after supposedly searching for 2 hours, so he technically would have had enough time to cover his tracks. But here's one additional complication which frustrates the hell out of me. The Charlie Project profile page for this case states that Tara's Pontiac Fiero was discovered on the West Loop North Freeway at 2:30 a.m. But we know Wayne was the one who called it in at 7 o'clock, so does this mean that other witnesses saw the vehicle parked there as early as 2:30, before Wayne discovered it later that morning? It should be mentioned that the Charlie Project page also states that Wayne left the pool hall at 1:45 a.m. and was gone for an hour and 45 minutes before returning. But I think that's inaccurate, since the detective interviewed in the Unsolved Mysteries segment specifically said that Wayne left around midnight and was gone until 1:45. So it's possible that the Charlie Project's info about Tara's car being discovered at 2:30 is incorrect as well. However, if the vehicle was actually seen on the freeway around that time, then this narrows down Wayne's window of opportunity considerably and makes it more likely that an unknown perpetrator was responsible for what happened to Tara. Now, it appears that the only thing wrong with the Pontiac Fiero when it was discovered was that the alternator belt was missing, which is very unusual to say the least. I don't think it's very common for an alternator belt to just fall out of a car on its own, but I have read accounts of it happening before, though it's just as likely that someone removed the alternator belt deliberately. Technically, you can still drive without an alternator belt, but it's responsible for charging your battery, so your battery will eventually die out or your engine will overheat. Since the West Loop North Freeway was on Tara's normal route home, she could have driven a few miles without knowing that someone removed her alternator belt before her vehicle finally gave out and she was forced to pull over. Since Tara was always walked to her car by security at the men's club, it's not like anyone could have attacked or abducted her in the parking lot. So if she was being stalked, then perhaps someone decided to remove the alternator belt and follow Tara's vehicle when she left, hoping that she would soon have car trouble and they could pull over and take advantage of the situation. Of course, removing the alternator belt is a strange way to do this, since there was no guarantee that Tara's car would give out before she made it back home, and since there was usually security around the parking lot at the men's club, I'm not sure if anyone would have been able to tamper with the vehicle undetected. I somehow doubt that Wayne would have gone to the trouble of sabotaging Tara's car that night since he lived with her, though if he was the one who planted Tara's vehicle by the freeway, he could have removed the alternator belt in order to give off the false impression that she had experienced car trouble. But a third explanation is that no one tampered with Tara's car, and the alternator belt did somehow fall off on its own. If she always drove the West Loop North Freeway on her route home, then she could have pulled over to the shoulder of the freeway once the battery stopped working. Even if she wasn't being followed, Tara still could have experienced the bad fortune of having a random psycho pull over to offer her a ride, only for him to abduct and murder her, which could have occurred without any witnesses since this took place in the middle of the night. However, the one detail which goes against this theory is Tara's mace being found inside her locked car. According to everyone who knew her, including Wayne, Tara always carried the mace with her, so it seems doubtful that she would have left it in the car if she accepted a ride from someone, unless it was a person she trusted. So before we talk about Wayne some more, we have to address some other alternate potential suspects. Let's start with that weird business with Robert Beatty, the young man who impersonated a police officer and contacted Tara's family to let them know he was about to solve the case, and even went so far as to attempt to organize a search for her. It was crazy to find out that Beatty did all this when he was only 18 years old, so it almost sounds like he was some sort of Frank Abagnale-type con artist who had delusions of grandeur about being a police detective. Since it sounds like this wasn't the first time Beatty impersonated a police officer, I'm guessing he inserted himself into this particular investigation because it happened to be one of the biggest unsolved cases in Houston at that time, and not because he had any sort of personal connection to Tara. Given his young age, and the fact that he willingly called attention to himself, I'm inclined to think that Beatty had no involvement in Tara's disappearance, and just caused an unnecessary distraction. Of course, the other major person of interest is the male patron from the men's club, who frequently wrote Tara love notes, left her $100 tips, and just seemed to have an unhealthy obsession with her in general. It's not uncommon at all for men who frequent strip clubs to develop a fixation on the women who work there, even though Tara was just a waitress, not a dancer. If this man had knowledge of Tara's relationship problems with Wayne, then he was probably hoping he could move in on her if they broke up. Some of this guy's love notes were displayed on screen during the Unsolved Mystery segment, and while it doesn't appear that he ever made any direct threats towards Tara, these notes still seem pretty unsettling. Under normal circumstances, I'd say this guy seems like a much more promising suspect than Wayne, but the police did investigate him, and while they've never specified how they came to this conclusion, they are inclined to think he wasn't involved. But even if this particular patron from the club is innocent, that doesn't necessarily mean that Tara could not have drawn the attention of someone else who frequented there. She worked at the club for 3 years, so she would have encountered plenty of people who might have had the inclination to harm her. But now we have to get back to Wayne, and discuss some of the unconfirmed rumors which have been spread about him online. Like I mentioned earlier, there appears to be no shortage of people who have written message board posts and comments about this case, and claim to have known Tara and Wayne personally. Some of these commenters have said some pretty unflattering things about Wayne, while other commenters have defended him, though I will say that the former comes off as much more credible. As an example, if you go to the lengthy thread about this case on the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum, you'll find a series of posts from around 2007-2008 from a poster named Flaca4057, who claims she was in an abusive relationship with Wayne years after Tara went missing. She described him as being a very jealous, possessive person, and believes he was more than capable of harming Tara. Well, another poster in that thread decided to defend Wayne by writing one of the dumbest comments I've ever seen. When Flaca4057 described an incident where Wayne gave her a black eye and a fractured rib, this other poster accused her of lying and literally wrote, quote, "I know, Wayne. A black eye? Maybe. Broken ribs? Doubtful." What? Abuse is abuse, and I'm pretty sure a black eye is just as bad as a broken rib. So yeah, it would not surprise me at all if one or more of the posters who showed up on the board to defend Wayne may have actually been Wayne himself. Anyway, I'm not going to dwell too much on the information shared in these posts, because I don't know how truthful it is. All of the media coverage of this case does mention that Wayne and Tara's relationship was troubled, but it has never been publicly confirmed if he was abusive towards her. However, one consistent detail which I've seen mentioned by multiple posters is that Wayne was involved in dealing cocaine, and given that he did not hold down a legitimate job at that time, I don't find that unbelievable. In fact, if Wayne had nothing to do with Tara's disappearance, then this could provide an alternate explanation for the 1 hour and 45 minutes when he left the pool hall and his whereabouts are unaccounted for. If Wayne was involved in drugs, and this was the actual reason for his absence, this might explain why he wasn't more forthcoming with the police, since providing a rock-solid alibi would essentially involve implicating himself in illegal activity. Anyway, out of all the people who have posted about this case online, two of the most interesting are a poster claiming to have been a dancer at the men's club, and a poster who says they were the bartender at the pool hall on the night Wayne was there. They both commented on both the Unsolved Mysteries message board and the case's profile page at the official Unsolved Mysteries website, and you can easily find their comments there under the names Dancer2 and The Bartender. Again, I don't know how truthful this information is, but it's still worth sharing. The dancer claims that Wayne was very controlling over Tara and would constantly call the men's club to check on her. If Tara ever took too long to return home after her shift ended, Wayne would call up the club to look for her, yet on the night she went missing, he apparently never attempted to call them at all. The dancer also claims that the men's club collected money to put together a reward for information about Tara's disappearance, but only a few months later, Wayne apparently told them that he believed she would never be found, and asked for the reward money for himself as compensation for the loss of Tara's income. Yeah, so if any of this is true, then it looks pretty bad for Wayne. Now, the comments by the bartender from the pool hall are even more interesting. They claim that Wayne was supposed to be working as a barback that night, which would have involved assisting the bartender as potential training for him to eventually get a bartending job himself. But of course, Wayne left the pool hall shortly after midnight, but did not return for nearly 2 hours, and he allegedly asked the bartender to lie and say he had been there the entire time. The bartender also wrote that Wayne returned to the pool hall with a friend of his who died of a drug overdose years later. I'll reiterate that I have no idea if there's any truth to these claims, and I'm not going to repeat the name of Wayne's alleged friend, but one thing I can believe is that if Wayne did kill Tara during the time period he was away from the pool hall, then I don't believe he would have been able to cover it up without the help of an accomplice. Another key piece of information about this case which has never been made clear is whether or not Wayne had his own vehicle for traveling that night. You know how you can sometimes get frustrated while watching an Unsolved Mysteries reenactment because it features a key detail which you're not sure is accurate? Well, in the reenactment where Wayne discovers Tara's car on the side of the freeway, he's shown pulling over inside a pickup truck driven by another guy, but they don't explain who this guy is, and if it's meant to be the friend Wayne was supposedly with when he returned to the pool hall. If this is an accurate representation of how the scene really happened, then this implies that Wayne did not have a vehicle of his own and needed someone else to drive him around while he searched for Tara. So if he is guilty, I'm not sure how Wayne could have gotten rid of Tara's body and abandoned her car without transportation, which means he would have required an accomplice. You also might be wondering where Wayne could have disposed of Tara's body in such a large city, but Houston is nicknamed the Bayou City because it has 4 major bayous and 10 winding waterways which flow through the surrounding area. So there is no shortage of watery areas where Wayne or anyone else could have disposed of a body without anyone ever finding it, even if they were working under a limited time frame. If Wayne was the perpetrator, I do find it far-fetched that he would have crossed paths with Tara on her way home, so the only explanation which makes sense to me is if Wayne went back to his apartment after leaving the pool hall before Tara unexpectedly came home early. If she was planning to leave him, then the situation could have escalated into a fight which left Tara dead. If one of Wayne's friends accompanied him to the apartment when he went there, then they might have been present when Tara was killed, and Wayne convinced him to help him cover the whole thing up. Wayne may have decided to keep Tara's body inside the apartment and return to the pool hall at 1:45 in an attempt to fabricate an alibi for himself, and did not actually go to the trouble of disposing of Tara and abandoning her car until later that morning. By the time 7 o'clock rolled around, Wayne pretended to search for Tara before he discovered her vehicle. However, this is just a hypothetical situation, though if a lot of the damning information shared about Wayne in those online comments and posts is true, then this scenario is a lot more believable. but there are enough unanswered questions that I just can't say with 100% certainty that Wayne is guilty, and if he is, I don't think he acted alone. Remember, even though police said that Wayne had not been eliminated as a suspect, they never actually named him as a suspect either, because there really isn't any hard evidence against him at all. And you really can't completely discount the possibility that Tara crossed paths with the wrong person on her drive home who wound up doing her harm. One thing we do know for sure is that Wayne died of cancer nearly 4 years ago, so he took whatever secrets he had with him to the grave. But if he killed Tara, well, I guess that really does mean he owes an explanation to the Lord. Anyway, if you happen to have any information about the unsolved disappearance of Tara Breckenridge, please contact the Houston Police Department at 713-731-5223. That's 713-731-5223. Anyway, another special thanks to our latest Trail Went Cold voiceover contest winner, Cheryl Weldon, for doing such a tremendous job at narrating the opening of this episode. This has been a recurring monthly contest for nearly 2 years, so if you've already entered it before, you're automatically eligible for all of our future random drawings, so you don't have to do anything. But if you'd like to enter and haven't already done so, please send me an email under the subject line, Trail Went Cold Contest, naming the one unsolved cold case you would most like to see featured on this podcast. Once again, send me an email under the subject line, Trail Went Cold Contest, to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. Over the past year, we've already produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and we've got another bonus episode lined up for this month. So to learn more information, feel free to visit our Patreon page. I'd also like to take a moment to send a shout out to our most recent listeners who have signed up to support us on Patreon this week, and they are Derek W., Allison C., Matt P., and Jennifer L. Thank you all so much for your support. And I'm excited to announce that in just over 2 weeks, I will be appearing at the True Crime Podcast Festival being held at the Marriott Downtown Hotel in Chicago on July 13th. Dozens of your favorite true crime podcasters will be there, and I will be teaming up with Christy from Canadian True Crime to do a live show in which we'll be discussing some Canadian cases. So if you would like to purchase tickets to the event, feel free to visit their website at tcpf2019.com. And that's not all. Later this summer, on August the 18th, I will be returning to Toronto to participate in another True Crime podcasting event at the Royal Cinema. In addition to myself, other podcasters who will be participating include Christy from Canadian True Crime, Jordan from the Nighttime Podcast, Nina from Already Gone, and Aaron from Generation Y. At the event, we'll be doing a presentation about the Donnellys, the infamous Canadian case from the 19th century, and the show will also include a panel discussion, an interactive Q&A, and a meet and greet. Tickets are $25 each, and you can find the link to our website to purchase them in our episode description. Also, just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unresolved Mystery subreddit and the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum, where, like I mentioned in this episode, there is a very interesting thread about the Tara Breckenridge case. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week, and join me next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm sorry.